For the next hour, we'll be doing Geek Speak, geek news, and talking with, well, special guest, a friend of Miles and mine, Dan Wang, a developer and programmer.
Geek Speak's podcast and website are brought to you by GNI, a full-featured web hosting facility that provides co-location services and high-bandwidth connectivity. More information about GNI is available at www.gnihosting.com.
It is Friday, December 2nd, 2005, 10:06 a.m. on the central coast of California. It's time now for Geek Speak. Welcome to Geek Speak, bridging the gaps between geeks and the rest of humanity. My name's Lyle Troxell. Please keep in mind the views expressed during Geek Speak are not necessarily those of KUSP. Today on Geek Speak, after Spot of Geek News, we're speaking with Dan Wang about, well, geeky matters. You'll like them. I do. We also take your questions and comments during the second half of the show. The phone number to call in, 476-2800. Or, if you're a little longer distance in California, you're welcome to use our toll-free number at 1-800-655-5877. And, of course, if you're connected, you can go to geekspeak.org to send us email. This is Geek Speak. My name's Lyle Troxell. In the air with me is Geek Miles Elam, technical trainer at Surf Control. Miles, welcome to Geek Speak.
Good morning.
Miles, thank you so much for being here today with me. I appreciate it. Your mind is always well appreciated, at least on air. So, Miles, let's start some geek news, sir. We're going to have Dan Wang, your and my former boss at Feed the Monster Media, where we first met in an interview with the three of us. That's pretty exciting, I think. And he's gone off to get... we'll talk a little bit more about Dan when we welcome him in about 15 minutes. But before we do that, let's do some geek news. You've got a lot today. What's top of your list?
Well, I guess it's worth talking about ICANN, which is the organization that gives out domains or manages the domain name registry for the world. And it's a U.S.-based corporation.
Nonprofit corporation.
Right. And at the same time, there have been other countries that have basically said they're not comfortable with a single U.S. corporation being involved with giving out all the information. In other words, whenever you're trying to connect up to a foreign company's website, let's say you go to the UK version of Yahoo and you put in yahoo.co.uk as opposed to yahoo.com, that's still controlled by ICANN. ICANN is still the one who's taking care of, okay, UK refers to Great Britain, and
here's their domain name servers and so on.
Exactly.
Now, what we're talking about is the domain name server, the name of websites and email. The base name, yahoo.com, google.com, geekspeak.org, kusp.org, those are all domain names. And when you ask for one of those, any of those, you have to go through this whole process happens in the back end to find the actual address of the server that's supposed to respond to you. And that process is managed, and when you register those domains, you're actually part of the ICANN U.S. nonprofit corporation structure of managing domain names. It's a pretty major feature of the web. I mean, without this, the web doesn't work.
As a quick background for folks out there who probably aren't familiar with how DNS works.
Like everybody.
Right, exactly. When you type in, for example, www.google.com into...
Or geekspeak.org.
Or geekspeak.org. Okay, I'll use geekspeak.org.
Let's use KUSP. I just like that.
KUSP. That's fine. www.kusp.org. What goes on is... behind the scenes, when you are asking your local DNS server, which is something provided by your ISP, usually completely transparent to you, what will happen is it will say, oh, well, who's .org first? And then it will go and basically go to what ICANN has specified as being the, or what are known as top-level domains. The root-level domains.
Okay.
And what these are saying where everything is, .org, .com, .uk, .es,
right.
Things like that. Then after it finds one, it asks, okay, who's in charge of .org? then they're going to have another set of computers.
Right. And then they're going to say that the KOSP is owned by, or is at this server.
Right. Is at this.
So it's a pointing. It's an address pointing. It's
right.
It's like
a hierarchical tree.
And it's a great system. It works real well, blah, blah, blah. But the first level of that is this corporation that is incorporated in the United States.
Right. And at the same time, ICANN is coming back saying that it's denying that it gives the U.S. government too much control over its operations. It's not beholden to one operation. It is doing very well.
Right.
And so while there is a lot of push from the from foreign governments, at the same time, you have to wonder, well, how's it going to work? Like, in theory, it's kind of like the UN, I think, of in theory.
Yeah,
it's a great idea. And at the same time, I also wonder about, well, isn't Syria on the UN Security Board?
Right.
At this point? And so where would it be if ICANN didn't have it?
Right.
You know,
so, well, let's say it goes to the UN. I mean, assuming that's the that's the largest central organization, government, if you will, structure. Do they even have something in place to manage something like that? Can you even incorporate in that way? You can't. I mean, there isn't a structure. And that's one of the things about it.
Incorporate
right?
a structure and...
Well, I mean, international corporations, kind of what we're talking about. I mean, that's what you start turning into. If you want to get larger than being a U.S. corporation, you become an international corporation. So how does that help us? Then ICANN is now a nonprofit in multiple countries.
Some organization that
right.
is not necessarily incorporated.
It does have to exist in our physical world. In any case, let's go on because there's more news, and it's a really interesting story that basically other governments are concerned that this one corporation that controls the internet basically is a U.S.
Well, and I'm sure it's also in response to the Iraq war and politics in general. And
not everybody likes us in the world. Okay, so... understatement. Okay, what's the next news story, my man? Let's talk about an IE vulnerability. I don't know if you've got this on your list, but Microsoft announced Internet Explorer vulnerability. That's never happened before, so it's kind of a strange thing. Oh, wait, I'm sorry. It hasn't happened this month. Okay, and it's the
second.
Yes,
that would be what was known as irony.
thanks. So Internet Explorer has another vulnerability, which means that if you use Internet Explorer, you have a potential for people to run code on your computer, which can install viruses and use your computer for other purposes or steal data from your computer. Okay, so we know that exists. They don't have a patch for it yet. They're just saying be careful. But we have a great solution.
But there's more to that story, though.
Okay.
Because the original problem was found 6 months ago or a fair amount of time ago. Long time ago, but at the time it wasn't assumed that it was going to be very serious, and so the bug has just been considered this minor flaw that could be used for a denial of service attack. In other words, it could keep someone from browsing the web, but it couldn't cause any permanent damage to your system, and so the bug went unfixed for many months. And then someone found, here's a way to exploit this, and so you had organizations such as Secunia, which is a security watch organization, that did something that was very rare, which they said this is an extremely critical flaw now because it has there is now an open hole for someone to exploit, and yet the bug has been around and has been well known for many months now. And in fact, a Trojan has been released into the wild. There actually is something out there that can affect you. Now, bear in mind, though, this is not simply your system is just by sitting there is going to cause a problem. You actually have to go to websites
that are infected, if you will, or that pass the data along. Okay, but what I want to go along with that is there's a great browser, and the newest version is out, Firefox 1.5, which is really quite impressive. That's another news story. It was released this last week. I'm using it now. It's got a couple great features from the user interface perspective, and it's got better security in it. One of the user interfaces features that I love in the new Firefox is the draggable, resortable tabs. Mm-hmm. So you can open multiple tabs in one window and then move them around. Very convenient when you're, preparing news for a radio show. but in general, it's quite a useful thing. Dan is now on the phone with us. Dan Wang, welcome to GeekSpeak.
Hi, welcome to here.
So, Dan, we're just going to keep on doing a little bit of news, but please feel free to join us at any point, and then in a little bit we're going to talk a little bit more about who you are. So let's do one more news story. I just want to mention, so Firefox is out there.
Continuation talking
please
about
do.
Firefox. Someone that brought this up to me a little while ago Firefox plugin that allows for page thumbnails. Now, a feature for folks who have not used the Firefox browser before is that you have a base browser that has, you know, just web browsing, stops pop-ups, the like. But you can also download extensions that will add functionality to the browser. But that
hacks, but there's actually an interface for building these.
Yeah, and not everyone may want that feature, but if you do, then you can download that. That's why the base install is very clean, very simple, but you can mix and match which things you want.
So what's this page thumbnailer thing?
What it does is you have a list of thumbnails up at the top, as if you've ever used it, you've seen them before. And when you put the mouse over the tab, it pulls down a screenshot of the page that you are viewing at that time.
So you're talking about the different tabs across the top of your browser. When you hover over the tab, a thumbnail of that page shows up,
so you can see what it was that you were looking at.
That's kind of cool plugin. Okay,
As opposed to just looking to seeing what the name is and the icon, you can actually see a quick little screenshot and go, oh, that's what I was looking at. Okay.
Cool. All right, well, should we go on?
By the way, that was that one is called Foxpose.
How do you get these plugins for Mozilla Firefox?
If you're in Firefox, you can go to Tools, Extensions, and that will show the existing extensions that are loaded in, and then there's a link on that window that says Get More Extensions, and that will take you to a page that has a archive of all of them.
You know, a little while ago, a big news story happened about Safari, the Apple Macintosh browser, that it passes a CSS rendering test that's been around for a long time. It's the ACID test. It's the first browser to do that. And I've been using the newest Safari, and the other day when 1.5 of Mozilla Firefox came out and I installed it, I went in and switched my default browser for the first time really to Firefox rather than Safari on the Macintosh. And I think I like it better than Safari. And that's kind of a back and forth thing. But just to let you know that Safari and Firefox, I think in my mind, are really optimal browsers. If you're on a Macintosh environment, switch between the two. If you're on Windows, Firefox.
That actually reminds me, and this, I'm sorry that you only wanted one news story left, but I did have to note that there was a security release, a critical security vulnerability release for OS X.
Yes.
And so if people get that notification saying there's a new update for your OS X operating system,
do it.
Please do it.
Okay, but here's a big caveat to that. There's been a lot of problems with the most recent QuickTime on the Macintosh environment. If you're using external FireWire drives like cameras, DV cameras, and external FireWire video sources like a DV camera, and you're doing a lot of movie editing and stuff on your Mac, which a lot of Mac people do, the most recent QuickTime 7 something, I think it is, the update that would come along around this time, it really messes that up. It doesn't let you to read your camera anymore. It's a big problem at UCSC for some people that do video editing. And I just want to make a very strong caveat. If you haven't upgraded your most recent QuickTime release in Apple's auto updates, if you will, don't choose that one. Uncheck it. I will inform you later if it's been fixed, but for now...
Right. When you do the updates, you have a list of all the items you can update. Uncheck, yeah.
Okay. So... I know, Miles, that you did a lot of news, because last night when we were chatting about what we were doing today for the show, I mean, John Tracy and Drew and Sean are all doing work now during the day and aren't able to come to the show, and it's been a while, and we're working on the solution to that. That's not going to be a problem soon, but you were able to come in, and last night I went, my work schedule was so strange and strong that I didn't hook up somebody to talk to today. So,
except he sounded a lot more panicked when he was mentioning it to me.
I was breathing heavy. Well, so any case, I mean, we've been doing this for 5 years. We kind of know how to blab on air and sound less than intelligent, and we do that every week. But I decided to get somebody that would help us sound a little more interesting, and I thought of interesting people that you and I know that are up late at night and are online. Dan Wang really came to mind. He was online and available, which was good. So I chatted with him, and he said yes, very late at night. And Dan Wang, thank you very much for joining us today on GeekSpeak.
Thanks for having me.
And I understand that you're on a cell phone, and that's the way it's going to be because you're a very portable kind of person, and I really appreciate you taking your busy time out of your schedule. So when you hired me and Miles at Feed the Monster Media, I don't think you hired Miles, but you were our boss at Feed the Monster Media, we were doing a lot of Microsoft development. We were doing ASP development, COM objects, things of that nature. And I recall you being quite the go-getter and doer in coding, and I was always kind of impressed with your abilities. And when I chatted with you the other day, you said that you just finished your MS in computer science from San Diego, UC San Diego. I was kind of flabbergasted because I thought you'd already gone through your degree process. So why'd you go back to school if you were already a really relatively successful developer?
Well, actually, I wasn't. I mean, I was at the time I was doing had been doing development for several years. But then, as if you call it FTM, I was doing more management. And after that, I did a few startups with similar situations, doing more management. And it became a certain point I realized that it, you know, I wasn't particularly good at it, and also it wasn't something I really interested in. And one of the things I want to do, which is go back, be more focused on the technology. And in hindsight, probably wasn't that good to get a degree, because a bunch of stuff wasn't really, you know, something I already experienced, and
right.
a lot of the coursework became kind of more busy work than actually learning experience. But it was good to kind of refocus myself on, you know, more on the technology aspect.
I think that's a really interesting. I think that makes sense for you. I mean, knowing you, I think it does make sense. I mean, I wouldn't say that your management style was poor in any way. I really liked you as a manager. But I remember you know, having a problem, needed to be, I mean, we have a very fast work environment. Radio websites are very stressful in that the content always changes. So I recall, you know, you'd hear about something that we needed to solve, and instead of a typical manager saying, we'll do this in 3 weeks, and here's my staff that will work on this, the next day you'd have it done. So you like to be coding, it seems to me.
Right. I think, and that's the case with the, you know, the jobs full of that as well. It's just that there are a lot of really interesting problems I wish at a time to solve myself rather right. than giving to somebody else. It's yeah. more selfish reason than anything else.
So you've bounced around a whole bunch of startups, and you're doing another one with a partner. Rasmel Research, what do you guys do?
Well, we do a couple of things, but generally focus around predictions, making useful predictions for people. And the first few things we're looking at are trying to, you know, it's a kind of almost cliche type of thing, trying to predict what the stock market is going to do.
You know, and people have done this before, right?
Well, there's a lot of different ways of going about it. And then actually, there's one theory out there, and then there's we meet a lot of people with that same kind of objection that the market cannot be predicted. There's it's 100% efficient. There's what every information that relating to a company is already in the stock price itself. So any attempt to predict it would end up in failure.
Right.
And that's a very common. It's called the efficient market hypothesis. And to a certain extent, that was really popular near the end of '90s, the early '90s, and then toward the mid '90s, and then near the end, there's a few studies came out saying that's not 100% accurate. There's a certain amount of inefficiency in the market. And one of the big inefficiencies that you know about is people lying. Executives at companies that they falsely report books, you know, we've seen a lot of this in Enron and WorldCom. And that creates inefficiency in the marketplace, where basically you have imbalanced information. Somebody knows more about the real, you know, the inner happening of a company more than you do,
right,
as an investor. And so there's a few of this information that we're looking at, and we're trying to use that as a way to predict a movement of a stock price.
Okay. Wow. You also said to me the other day that you were working on some fraud detection stuff. I know you can't get into it, but that's another aspect that's, I think, extremely important in prediction of companies right now.
I can talk about it a little bit. Basically, is you're looking at, you know, this is actually a question that's pretty common. A pretty popular field in the research, financial research right now, is if you, by just looking at a company's reporting, meaning like the SEC filings and price and other activities, can you get a good sense whether a company is being truthful about accounting or not? And there's some research saying that you really can't, but there's others showing with, you know, definite results saying that yes, you can to a certain extent. It's a very hard problem.
Right.
Similar to, because you know, I don't know if most people know this, but when you swipe a credit card, a very large-scale fraud detection system goes into play to figure out that particular purchase. Is this a purchase or not?
Right. So if someone's been purchasing constantly sports equipment and male shoes, and I don't know if the gender is ever determined, but a whole bunch of stuff in the arena of outdoor activities, and then a purchase is made for a large flat screen television, that might be an issue. So
right.
That kind of detection stuff is happening in the background with credit card companies. So you're going to try to do this in the public information?
No, I'm saying, like, I'm giving examples of the fraud
that happens.
That problem, the company, you know, the largest company doing that is called a company called Fair Isaac. It's here in San Diego as well. And they, their problem is, you know, arguably much easier, because when people have fraudulent activities, they know. That gets reported. So your training case for that, for this kind of problems are, you know, that they're vast and they're almost 100% accurate. one of the big problems with fraud detection for corporate is that you don't, your training cases really isn't that great because you don't know when somebody lies. Because oftentimes when people lie, they don't necessarily get caught. Some do, but not, most of them do not, I think.
Cool. I think you got something. I mean, I hope it works out for you. We have a few more minutes before I want to take a break. So I want to ask you, Dan, when you went, let's talk about the technology you're using, because maybe you and Miles are a little bit geeking out. At Feed the Monster, we're doing a lot of Microsoft technology, ASP, VBScript, C codes, C++ actually. And now you're doing a lot more Java, JBoss, J2E environment stuff. That's a lot what Miles is doing. So you guys, have you been connecting lately on what you're doing?
No, we haven't actually.
Okay, so what kind of environment are you working on right now?
Well, we have two, and basically, we have two systems. We have an offline system that does the analytics ahead of time because there's just too much calculation to do in real time, and we have an online system that to publish that information. And the publishing side of the system is a traditional Java-based system, the J2E with anti-beans, with session beans, and JSPs for the web page itself. And the analytics is something quite something else altogether. It's MATLAB with C++ components.
Okay. Now I do have to be honest. This is for the audience out there that I am grinning right now that Dan is going off on. Oh yeah, I'm using this Java technology and it's really cool because many years ago when we were working at Feed the Monster, he had nothing good to say about it.
He had so many bad things to say about it. I mean, you guys had battles about Java. We had no Java development, and Miles was like, "We got it."
I knew when I agreed to go on this was going to come. One thing I do have to say that we didn't choose Java because we thought it was superior anyway. We just picked it because it's free, and it was good enough that.
Which is also in contrast to when we were going to Feed the Monster. It's like no,
we had a big budget then. I think,
yeah. And so, it sounds like I'm giving him a hard time, but I mean, really,
Miles, I wouldn't expect anything less of you.
No, but I mean, for the audience out there, I also have to say, like, when I started, I started to Feed the Monster when I was working with Dan. I was heavily, I really liked Java development, and I was very much dismissive of Windows technology a lot of times, and. It was Dan, actually, that explained to me how many of the technologies worked where I simply wasn't aware of that. Mm-hmm. And he did make me a better coder, or at least make me aware of a lot of technologies out there that I wasn't already.
Let's be fair.
It was a two-way street.
Right,
to your point, I think I remember one distinct statement I made before was that at the price of a few dollars per seat for Microsoft products, it was basically free. in the overall scope of their business.
Right. When you're talking about the staff salaries, the software doesn't even come into close to it. But let's be really fair, Dan, and let you to kind of be on the soapbox against Miles, because Miles is now working for a company which is very much Windows environment programming. So he's not... Miles, are you doing any Java programming now?
Not programming really at all.
So,
training.
You know, it's kind of telling that Miles is actually still at a company that's doing Microsoft technology and actually teaches it. So
I did not know that. Wow. I'm shocked.
I'm glad you guys aren't in the same room. You guys can be fisticuffs, you know.
The wheel keeps turning.
Yeah. All right, we are yakking as geeks often do, and we're doing that on air like we do every week. And people seem to like us, and that's why this program is supported by a grant from Santa Cruz Electronics, offering an extensive selection of computer and electronic parts, as well as support services. Santa Cruz Electronics is open daily at 2808 SoCal Avenue and online at santacruzelectronics.com. You're listening to Geek Speak. If you have questions or comments, now's the time to call in and ask us. We'll take anything. 476-2800, toll-free at 1-800-655-5877, or you can go to the Internet. Visit geekspeak.org, using ICANN to actually get there. click on Contact Us to send us email. We are speaking with Daniel Wang, and also in the air room is Miles Elam. I'm Lyle Troxell. This program is supported by a grant from Cruise.io, providing local and nationwide internet services, including DSL 6.0, spam filters, and virus protection. Information about Cruise.io membership is available online at cruise.io.com or by calling 459-6301.
This week on This American Live.
Is Kennedy your friend?
No.
No, you're not my friend.
It was breaking Lisa's heart to see her kids not just fighting, but not even liking each other. So she designed a one-month-long experiment, one any parent could try, to bring her kids, well, closer together. The results, this week.
Catch This American Life Sunday at 10 a.m. on Central Coast Public Radio, KUSP.
And of course, this is Central Coast Public Radio, KUSP, right now. You're listening to Geek Speak. My name's Lyle Troxell. The geek in the air room with me is Miles Elam. He used to be a programmer. Now he's a technical trainer, but he's a really great guy. And we met because of Dan Wang, who was his boss at the time. They mistakenly hired me. In any case, Dan Wang is on the phone with us, and we are taking your calls and questions of technology. There's a couple numbers open. You can call and try to get in there, 476-2800, or toll-free at 1-800-655-5877, or use the Internet. Visit geekspeak.org and click on Contact Us. And, Miles, are you able to check email now? Is this whole sharing the Internet thing through my Apple working?
Oh, you were actually expecting me to check my inbox.
I would like you to check it because I'm doing a few things, and it would be great if you could check the email. And we're going to go ahead and go to a call. And, Dan, I want you to stay with us, and it is a little hard for you to hear the guest, but I think it'll work in any case. All right, let's see. Who is it that is on line one with us? You've been waiting so long, Jim. Welcome to Geek Speak from Big Sur. What's your question?
You know, I'm out here in the hills, and all I've had was Net Zero or something like it, which I hated. I now have DSL.
In Big Sur?
Yeah.
Congratulations.
Great improvement, of course.
Uh-huh.
And I'm glad to have it. We've been waiting a long time, but I'm getting a hum on my phone line. When I'm on the phone, I hear this persistent hum. I used the filters uh-huh. that they provided, and I've got filters all over the place on every phone line connection I can find, and I'm still getting this hum.
Okay. Is the hum on every phone line? On every phone in the house?
Yes.
Okay. Are you relatively technical? Do you mind disconnecting wires and playing with electricity?
No, that's fine. I can do that. That's about all I can do, okay. But I can do that.
Well, let me assist you in breaking your phones. So what I suggest doing, first off, is going out to your phone box and opening up. One side you can open up and one side you can't because of the phone companies. But the side that you can open up should have a whole bunch of lines coming and connecting to your phone. Mm-hmm. You might have done this before. And these lines go into your house and go to each phone line. Sometimes when someone has kind of added phones later on, there's actually patches in the house that kind of jump the wires around. But most of the time, every phone line jack in the house has a line at the box that it connects to. So what you can do, and it's normally green and red, I believe, is the primary phone line in the house. But take a look at it. If you've got a digital picture, take a picture, because that way when you're trying to put it back together, you will have some kind of reference.
Right.
What you can do is just disconnect all of them, and you know, don't expect an important call. And
right.
Reconnect one pair, and then find out what phone that is. And if you really want to be, like, you know, clean about this, you could actually label that as kitchen phone once you find out. And the way you connect it up, you go around to the phones and you pick them up and listen to them. Oh, and let me just say one important thing. Ring voltage on a phone will hurt a lot. It's about 110 volts. It won't kill you, but it will hurt. And uh-huh. So you don't want to be touching those wires when the phone rings.
Right.
And since the phone can ring any time, don't put the wires in your mouth. It's just a silly thing to do. So,
and Lyle, you bring that up because?
Yes, I've done that. Well, you know, those phone wires, you can strip them with your teeth. It's really easy. And my front tooth is a little chip, so I've got a little notch there, and I strip wires with it. Well, a live phone line in your mouth when it rings, it just isn't fun. I promise you, you don't have to test this.
Yeah, it's an interesting picture. I think I'll try to avoid that.
I think so. So in any case, what you're going to do is disconnect all of them and connect one pair. And in doing that, you're going to disconnect your DSL modem. Or the DSL modem is the only thing that's going to be connected. So then you go and try the phone. And if there's no hum, you've got one step in the right direction. If there is a hum, it still could be that line. You swap to a different phone. You disconnect that first one. If there's still hum, then that hum is most likely coming from outside of your house, and you get to call and complain to your phone company, and they come out and help you. And then if they have to go into your house because your mistake was, you know, you made a mistake in what really happened, or they just want to test something, they're going to charge you way too much money. So don't right. let them go into your house.
Right.
Or don't let them work on your side of the phone lines. But once you've done that and it actually functions, then you know it's them. If not, you're going to find out which line it is, and there you've got your problem. So I think that's the best way to troubleshoot that problem. One other thing, newer phone boxes, which, you know, if you're in Big Sur and you're up in the mountains, you might not have a newer one. Maybe you do. When they did the DSL, they put a new box in. They when you open that panel up and you look at the connectors with all the cables and wires, there's actually a phone jack there that you can unplug. This is the newer ones. That phone jack, when you unplug it and pull it out, the mail, if you will, the one that slides in, that one, when you pull it out, that's actually your live phone line. And you can take a phone out there and plug it into your phone. It's a very short cable, so it's going to be hard to do, but you can do that. And that's the way to really disconnect your house from it. And that's basically what they do when they come out to your house. They unplug that, plug it into their phone set, and they go, sounds fine to me. It's your problem. So there you go. Hopefully it's one of your phone lines is running too close to some power. Now, why it happened with DSL connection, I don't know. Maybe you just become more attuned to what's going on in the DSL. But there's my rant. I hope it helps.
Okay. Thanks a lot.
Thank you so much for calling.
Right. Bye.
Bye-bye. And we've got other callers waiting. So, Dan, I hope you're patient. And if you have any input on this, Dan, please feel free to share it with us.
I'm amazed you knew that how to do that. I mean, my first thought would be the filters, but that was pretty impressive.
It could definitely be the filters. The thing is, he's gonna step through the process, and as he gets to it, he's gonna find out what it is that's causing the problem, and then he can determine if he wants to, like, not use that phone or if it's the filters. I mean, he'll get to that point. He'll be able to clarify what the problem is. Okay, so I think that's half the
and
part.
Yeah,
troubleshooting.
Tech support 101.
Tech support 101. Get to the basics. All right, we're gonna go to Santa Cruz. Well, we're in Santa Cruz, but we're gonna answer another phone line from Santa Cruz about Firefox. And hello, John. Welcome to GeekSpeak.
Yes. Good morning. I wanted to put in a plug or ask your opinion about Opera. I've been starting to use it, and I'm fairly favorably impressed. That's another browser, and with version 8.0, they've pulled out the ads, so it is ad-free now.
Oh, cool.
Ad-free, and it's an absolutely wonderful browser. I myself don't use it, but I know innumerable people who do and love it. I can't recommend it more highly.
Yeah, I like the fact that there's no ads. It is fully keystrokeable. You can, there's hotkeys, more hotkeys than I can find in Firefox. For example, like next link, other next page, other hotkeys are in there. And it also has voice-operated capability, and it seems to be more stable, I find, than Firefox. Once I install a couple of my favorite plugins in Firefox, I find it does crash on me somewhat regularly.
Once you try to make Firefox operate a little bit more like Opera, it crashes on you?
Yeah.
Yeah, right. Yeah, I think if you're happy with Opera, I think... I'll recommend people downloading and trying it. I should probably try it. It has great support. I mean, people love the browser as they use it.
It's a good, clean user interface. I mean, in a lot of ways, many of the browsers, I mean, look very much the same.
Yeah.
I mean, in a lot of ways, Firefox looks like IE.
Right.
You know?
Mm-hmm.
But it all, because they are all free,
yeah,
there's no reason why anyone can't download all of them, try them out, and go, I prefer this one.
Caveat. And also, Opera supports older operating systems. They're still supporting older operating systems,
exactly,
with the newer versions.
Yeah.
So if you're in, like, OS 9 and you want a good browser, Opera is your choice. That's OS 9 Macintosh. So in any case, though, I want to also mention something that you do, John, which is really the correct way to use a computer in a lot of ways, is knowing the keystrokes that you use instead of trying to use the mouse all the time. The mouse is the thing that kills your wrist. Typing is actually a lot better for your body than using your mouse to search around. And that's, of course, you know, there's back and forth thoughts on that, but you're definitely a faster computer user when you know the key commands that you like to do. And it's definitely something you should learn, and I commend you. I commend you, John, for doing that.
Well, thank you. Used to support a keystroking macro recording program back in the old days called SuperKey, so I've got a fondness for using the keyboard.
Yeah.
Wow, is that trip down memory lane. I had forgotten about that. Thank you. That was some fond memories.
You bet.
Washing back in me.
I use an enhancement to my Macintosh environment called Quicksilver, which is a keystroke type of thing. You can launch applications and move around and all through keystrokes, and I find it improves the speed at which I use the computer and the elegance, if you will. I can't even say it.
But you know, be eloquent, but you're elegant.
Yeah. Yeah, there you go. Thank you.
But it doesn't have any browser integration, does it?
No, no browser integration, no. Well, thank you so much, John, for the call.
You bet.
Bye-bye. Bye. All right, we're gonna move on because we've got other people, and we have some phone lines open if you'd like to call in, 476-2800, toll free at 1-800-655-5877. This time we're gonna stay in Santa Cruz, and we're gonna talk to Kaleo. Hello.
Hello.
Hello. How do you pronounce your name?
Kaleo.
Kaleo. Welcome to GeekSpeak.
Oh, hi. Thank you. Thanks for having the show. I really appreciate it. I recently got a laptop. And it's a Dell 6000 with XP, SP2. And my question's more about, it came with McAfee virus protection, and that's all expired, and I'm trying to figure out what to buy at this point. And I've got wireless DSL, and I just basically use it for internet, email.
And why not stay with McAfee?
I don't know. One question is virus protection enough? Do I need a firewall? All that kind of stuff.
You should do anything and everything in your power to protect your computer. So, yes, a firewall would be a very good idea.
In fact, if you have a power switch, just keep the computer off all the time because that's the best protection. I think that a point to the technology in trying to implement all the security features is going to mean that that's all you're dealing with. So I don't want you people to be, you know, paranoid about it, but it's definitely a serious threat.
Yeah, Service Pack 2 comes with a firewall enabled, so you're pretty much covered there unless you disabled it. Antivirus on Windows really is not an option.
You have to have virus protection.
It's a probably good idea to get anti-spyware software as well.
And what do you recommend, Miles?
One thing, if I may add, is that I don't know if you're aware of, there are free options available. You don't necessarily have to pay for these things.
Yes.
There are free virus checking, there are free spyware checkers, both from Microsoft and other sources, that you can get for your computer.
Yeah, but at less than $100, it should be free. It's free anyway, right?
Well, there are AV solutions, for example, like AVG Scan.
Yeah.
For example, that's a free one that's available as long as you just register for the product. But when I was looking at some stats to see like which ones took care of items, the items that worked best were, in fact, to pay for. The McAfee's, the Symantec's, the FPROT.
Yeah. You think that those are the better ones? Well, there was one thing that's really clear about this. You're buying a
using AVG scan, or using a free one, is better than not having one at all by a wide margin.
Right.
So if you're really price conscious, don't just skip it.
And let me just say that I am extremely price conscious, and I'm highly technical, and I still pay for virus protection on my Windows machines. And the reason I do that, I use... I'm blanking. Where's the check? Symantec's. And the reason I do that is that I just want to know that it's being taken care of. There's a corporation there. They're trying to make money. They don't want to have any vulnerabilities. They're going to do everything they can, because that's what they do, to make my computer safe. And therefore, the two Windows machines I have at home that are my machines of import, I have their software on, and it's running and making it safe and updating all the time. So I'm not saying that you should go necessarily to them. I think that McAfee versus Norton Antivirus, the same thing in a lot of ways. I mean, it's not really that different. And if you're already there, keep staying with them. If you want to be a little more frugal, go ahead and find a really great solution in the free market, in the open source market, if you will. That's definitely an option. You can also try Microsoft's new beta. I have no idea how well it works. They released it this week, or mentioned it this week. Windows Live Safety Center beta. And basically, it's a scanning, making your computer safe for viruses and Trojans and everything provided by Microsoft. Did you hear this news, Miles?
Mm-mm.
You seem like a blank stare. Well, the news story did hit today at like 7 a.m., so maybe that's why we didn't see it. But in any case, Windows Live Safety Center is basically a virus and security suite from Big Brother Microsoft.
Mm-hmm.
You can try it out. It's definitely something you could do that way.
Well, you mentioned keeping the computer off. You mean unplugged entirely?
Yeah, I meant completely off. That's the safe way to keep a computer. If you don't want viruses on it, just make sure there's no power going to the box.
Okay.
But it's not really, of course. I mean, I was trying to be funny, and I wasn't. I'm sorry.
Okay. And one last thing. Using Firefox rather than, what's the big popular one?
Internet Explorer?
Right. Does that also help with in terms of protection?
Yes.
It does. Okay, good. Okay, thanks very much.
Or Opera. Yeah.
Right, either one. Anything but Explorer, in other words.
That's like a mantra I say to myself when I'm brushing my teeth in the morning. Anything but Explorer. Thank you so much for calling.
Thank you. Bye-bye. Okay, bye-bye.
All right, we do have lines open. We will take your calls, questions in technology and other things. Jason from Salinas is now going to join us. What's up, Jason?
Yeah.
Hello.
Hello.
Hi.
Hi, how you doing?
Good. What's up?
I have a question about, I heard on a show that there's a town that was sending a network signal through power lines. Yeah. I don't know if it was in Washington or California.
I did a news story on this a year and a half ago or so, and that was a town in Kentucky. I don't remember the name of it.
And the technology at the time, as I recall, CB radios had a problem. Short radio. Ham radio had a problem with it because it actually caused interference in the ham radio band. So, in any case, what's your question? You want that because you're...
Yeah, I was wondering, has there been any advancement on that? I heard come to where they could notch out frequency for ham radios.
Mm-hmm.
But I was wondering if there's any advancement on that or if it did go national, what is our device needed to use it? Or
is this a scholarly question, or are you in a remote location and don't have high-speed access?
Well, I have... I'm connected to a wireless LAN that a gentleman set up in a small town that I live in.
Huh?
And it gets pretty good connection, but I have some friends that live in the city more, and they're on, like, a cable connection, and it just blows my connection away.
Right, and you can't get cable and you can't get DSL.
And I can't get cable or DSL where I'm at. I'm just a little bit too far out.
The breakthrough hasn't happened. I mean, first off, the power company in your area would have to launch this internet service, or
I should say,
regulation from Salinas would have to mandate that they do this, right? Or Monterey or Santa.
Well, no, County. Actually, how it usually has to be is there has to be regulation that
allows it.
You remove the non-compete. Basically, right. The reason why power internet over power lines, aside from the ham radio debate, which is still going on, by the way,
okay.
is the fact that many DSL providers and cable companies have worked out legislation or have lobbied for legislation that prevents the local government or facilities of them or utilities to compete with them.
Right.
Okay. So it's still up in the politics.
Yeah, and you're not, I mean, don't hold your breath.
Yeah, this takes in both technology and politics to a huge extent.
But, you know, if you've got some local ISP that's doing some point-to-point wireless, and they've got, like, a wireless service for you...
Yeah, that's what he's doing, yeah.
Call up and say, please, what else can we do? Can I pay a whole bunch of money to upgrade my system? And he'll probably say, yeah, you can get this kind of technology, and it'll get a lot faster, and he'll probably quote you something in the $900 range. And if you want to do that, I mean, they're going to be interested. I mean, have a conversation.
Okay.
These guys are normally pretty great.
Yeah.
Okay.
In the future, you should start looking at technologies. If you see something that's labeled as WiMAX, that's
uh-huh.
another one that I think will be coming to the forefront in the
yeah.
next year or so.
Okay.
Or at least the next 5 years.
Thank you, Jason,
okay.
for the call.
Thank you very much.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
We're speaking with Dan Wang. In the air room with me is Miles Elam. I'm Lyle Troxell. You're listening to Geek Speak. We're here every week trying to help you with your all the problems of technology and also the excitement. We do have another caller, but Miles, you had something to bring up.
There's an email
Please.
Coming up that was asking about a screen capture program that can be trusted. Curious wording.
Nothing. Don't trust nothing.
Right. I have heard folks that say they'd like Snagit. Although I've had some folks say that they had problems with it.
Okay.
But me, myself, on a...
And you?
On a Windows machine. Myself, me, myself, and I, when I'm on a Windows machine, I use just Alt Print Screen, which will take a grab of the current window, and then Control Print Screen will take the entire desktop. But you don't have some options such as grabbing where the cursor is or which
right.
menu I have
to
have.
And it makes
open,
a bitmap
so.
And saves it to where? The desktop?
Actually, it copies it to the clipboard, and then you would
paste
open up,
somewhere.
For example, Paint and paste it in. And if I'm on other operating systems, a lot of times I'll just use a Paint program like
mm-hmm.
the GIMP or Photoshop
mm-hmm.
to do a screen capture.
So, okay.
And that was
well,
from Richard from Moab.
That's a good thing to know. I think on the Macintosh environment, I use an application called Grabbit. But yeah, on the Windows, in both actually Macintosh and Windows environments, there is a built-in screen capture feature. Sometimes it's disabled by some software that doesn't want you to get a screen capture, and the other applications don't disable it.
Yeah,
if you
it depends
will.
On how much functionality
yeah.
you want. If you just want a picture of the screen you have open,
so what was
not
it?
A problem.
On a Windows machine?
On a
Alt
Windows machine,
print
it's Alt Print Screen to get the current window, and Control Print Screen to get the entire desktop.
A new feature for that button that everybody has on their keyboard that never is used. Miles, thank you very much. We're going to go, and you're still with us, right, right, Dan?
I'm here.
Okay, good. I'm sorry that we're not talking with you as much as I was thinking we would. We will, but we're gonna take Judith's call from Watsonville. Welcome, Judith, to Geek Speak.
Hi. Yeah. In your first part of the program, you were mentioning something that you shouldn't download this update, and I
yeah.
missed what went before that.
Oh well, that's too bad. No, it was on a Macintosh OS 10 environment.
Yeah, that's what I have.
Okay, it gets automatic updates always happen from Apple, right? Mm-hmm. So about once a week, probably by default, it pops up and says, "Hey, we've got some stuff for you to do." You can do this manually by going up to the Apple and going to Software Update, which is mm-hmm. like the second down choice. It will go connect to Apple, look at your system, all the software that Apple makes on your system. It'll look at the version numbers, including the operating system, and it will tell Apple, and then Apple will say, "Oh, well, here's some stuff that I know about that improves your system," and a list of applications to update will show up. And there'll be check mark boxes. This is why you're asking. One of them, most recently, was QuickTime, a QuickTime update. I did it automatically. I almost always follow Macintosh's suggestions on what I should upgrade. Then yesterday, the day before, one of the people that I work with came to me and said, "Have you updated QuickTime to the most recent? Because the patch broke all of my ability to import video into my computer." And I went, yikes. So I did a little searching. I'm curious about this kind of thing. Found out that, yeah, sure enough, there is a really bad flaw in the most recent version of QuickTime in which when you update it, you're, like, this is a Sony DV camera is the ones that we seem to be running into. You plug it into the FireWire port. Normally it would show up in iTunes, in iMovie. You'd be able to see it and grab the content. It doesn't anymore. It just is invisible. It doesn't show up anymore. And the solution to it is very complicated. So I'm not going to go into the details of the solution. You can do some Googling on it. But if you haven't updated it, don't.
Don't. Okay.
There you go.
Thank you.
Thank you so much for the call.
Mm-hmm.
Bye-bye.
Yeah, and I have a update here from Lee from Amsterdam. His statement is MW Snap is the ultimate free Windows screen capture. And also Josh here at KUSP uses Sprint 32, which apparently allows saving to specific formats and grabbing certain parts of the screen.
Yeah, but if Lee from Amsterdam, I mean, no offense to Jason, I mean, come on, I love him, but if Lee says that, I mean, Lee knows what's going on. He spends a lot of time on his computer, and he actually listens to the show every week, so he must know what's going on. Thank you, Lee, for MW Snap, grabbing software, if you will, screen grabbing software from Microsoft for the Microsoft environment for OS for a. Well, Miles already said it, so I won't get into it. Let's go back. Let's go back to Dan. Daniel. The other thing you mentioned in coding, like you're doing a lot of Java for the website side of it. We do that for GeekSpeak's website. It's done with Tomcat and Cocoon, and Tomcat's a Java servlet engine. In any case, you also mentioned MATLAB, which is that's kind of a complicated package. It's a multi-platform environment for doing math, really complicated math. Can you talk, are you doing a lot of that development?
Yes, we do. Much 100% what we do is basically mathematical. We do, I'm not a finance person, coming from a computer science background, but basically what we do is we take people's financial statements, we run through a lot of statistical analysis, run through machine learning, try to teach a machine to recognize certain patterns in the system, and that's all done through MATLAB.
It's something that folks, just as an aside, a lot of folks don't realize with computer science. They think of computer science as being programming, but really it's an applied mathematics degree in a lot of ways.
Well, in some cases, I think one of the reasons I was getting frustrated with a lot of the companies with before was that they were not so much mathematical in nature. They were both basically database driven. You take some data from database and show it on the screen and vice versa. It's not. There's not a whole lot of processing involved, and this is a little bit different that way. And this is one of the reasons why I like it so much.
Cool. Well, thanks. I just got an email, which I don't know if we can answer on air. The question is that we got a late night programmer, Chris from KSP, who uses our wireless here at the station, and they can't find the password anywhere to use the wireless because it's encrypted. And we'll have to put that up in the air room. So I'm assuming, Chris, that you're listening, and that's the answer. I'll put it up today before I leave, put it all over the place so that people know when you come in that you can use it. We also have a few future show suggestions, and I got to say that I love those. If you have a technical thing that you'd like us to investigate on air, please feel free to go to geekspeak.org and make a recommendation to us. If you want to hear more about digital photography, which I'm assuming no one wants to because we've been covering it so much, you can let us know. We'll take your suggestions and maybe even listen to them. So I would love that. Please feel free to go to geekspeak.org and do that.
And got another response from the original person that I thought was asking about screen capture, and he was actually looking more for video capture. In other words, I'm assuming now that it has to do with have your desktop open and you're working with applications, and you want to have want to record what's going on, like clicking through the menus and clicking through the buttons and watching items. And two items I can recommend are Captiva and Camtasia. One of them is by Macromedia, the other one I can't remember the company name, but
okay,
both of them.
Captiva and what was the other one?
I believe it's Macromedia Captiva. Does that sound right?
I don't know. Macromedia product, okay. And the other one is what?
Camtasia.
Camtasia. Okay, Camtasia.
Or Camtasia. One of those two. I don't know what I'm talking about.
So Miles Strawling suggests and that's what you should use. Thank you. We'll go on then. All right. Well, that's great. Thanks, Miles, for that clarity. The other thing that people like to do lots of times is capture video feeds, you know, video that they're watching. So it could also be that that's the question. And do you have a solution for that? Is there an easy way to, like, if you're looking, reading, viewing a real-time media player stream, can you capture that and save it to your computer? Is that something you can do? Dan, do you know the answer to this?
If you're looking at a pretty good... No, not really.
What I know, and probably the same as you, Dan, is that, yeah, those exist and people do that, but I never have. I think this
for grabbing, like, real video streams,
yeah.
And, like, you have to understand that real video, a lot of times, the software is made specifically so that you can't. That it is just downloading.
Jerks.
Or there's also, like, the pay for real player that I think does have some download, and there's some open source utilities for downloading, but I don't know that any of those solutions are for the faint of heart.
Okay. Well, thanks. That's good.
And the software is called Camtasia.
Camtasia, right on. We have one more question, but let's take Ted's question. Ted, what's your question? From Captola.
Hi.
Hi. Welcome to GeekSpeak.
Well, thank you. Listen, what was that? You were talking about the Sprint 40 and MW something else as a way of...
MW Snap for taking still images of your...
Yeah, Sprint 32 and MW Snap.
Case-sensitive spaces.
Oh, MW Snap is uppercase M, uppercase W, uppercase S, Snap. You can do a Google on it. You know what? I just realized that I've misplaced my time and realized I'm going to have to say goodbye to you right now because we are running out of it.
Well, I also was going to ask about timing on digital cameras. You know, this
Let me just say this. Please email us or stay on. Call us back in a few minutes, and I'll take your question off air.
Okay, Doug.
Thank you so much. Sorry for the confusion.
No problem.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
I also want to say goodbye to Dan Wang right now, who joined us. Dan Wang, Daniel Wang is a partner in Rasmol Research, some fraud detection software, and also some earnings projection software. I'm doing a lot of stuff in MATLAB and in Java. He's an amazing guy. And Dan, thank you very much for joining us today on GeekSpeak.
Thanks for having me.
Bye bye. Business with Pleasure is proudly sponsors GeekSpeak, a full-service business center in Felton offering color, printing, design, computer rentals, delivered office supplies, shipping via FedEx, UPS, DHL, and more. Details at businesswithpleasure.com.
Later, stories of disaster and rebuilding. In 2001, flash floods devastated southern West Virginia.
Rain and rain and rain. Next thing I know, the house was gone.
When that flood hit, I think that was just a blow that woke everybody up, and everybody says, hey, you know, we've got to do something.
How a community recovers from disaster, later on All Things Considered from NPR News.
And All Things Considered is on at 4 p.m. here at KOSP. The geeks this morning were Miles Elam and a guest from San Diego, Daniel Wang. Miles, thank you for participating as you do almost every weekend.
Glad to be here.
I really appreciate it. And thanks to Rick Philman, who answers our phones. He was a very busy man today, and I really appreciate Rick being here, volunteering his time, as does the rest of the geeks every week. Thank you very much for that. And I also want to thank you for listening to GeekSpeak, and especially to those that called in to participate and make us sound like we have answers to questions that you may have. We like that. Thank you very much for participating in GeekSpeak. And GeekSpeak is a registered service mark of Online Tonight with David Lawrence, used by permission. This program is supported by a grant from Santa Cruz Electronics, offering an extensive selection of computer and electronic parts, as well as support services. Santa Cruz Electronics is open daily at 2808 Soquel Avenue and online at santacruzelectronics.com. Miles, do you have one little thing to add in before we say goodbye? You were pointing at me a second ago. So.
I was.
Yeah. I like you pointing at me. It means you have something to say, and I just like that.
I think it was the zit on your forehead.
Oh, great. Thank you so much. That's the way to close the show. I really appreciate that. This is Central Coast Public Radio, KOSP, Santa Cruz, KBH San Ardo, on the web at kosp.org. Coming up next is Open Road, and then we have Two Steps on the Blues later on today with Charlie Lang. For KOSP and Geek Speak, I'm Lyle Troxell. Thanks for listening.